Welcome to Panorama, the flagship news and current affairs show at CIM, where we bring you the latest and most in-depth news stories from around the world. We deliver the big stories that matter to young Australians and our diverse community. So whether you're interested in current affairs, science, entertainment, culture, or anything in between, we've got you covered. Panorama, where youth hear it first.
CIN acknowledges and pays respect to the owners of the land on which the CIN HQ and studios stand, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations. CIN also acknowledges and pays respect to the elders and traditional owners of the lands our content reaches, as well as the radio stations we broadcast from across the country.
Welcome to Panorama Season 3. Today we will be discussing the new app called Threads with our newest member, Ruby, and we'll also be talking about the new access to abortion pills and science with Sura, my favourite segment where she gets to teach me everything about science and I have my jaw to the table. And now for today's headlines. Australia has committed to sending 30 more Bushmaster vehicles to Ukraine, taking the total fleet to 120. Anthony Albanese met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on the sidelines of the NATO summit to discuss the deal. It's believed a feud between organised crime groups is behind nearly a dozen arson attacks across Melbourne. An investigation launched into the 11 incidents are suspected to be connected to two Middle Eastern crime entities. A new drug to treat strokes is being hailed as a game changer and will be available to Aussies as early as next month. The blood-thinning medication called TB0309 claims to dissolve blood clots, blocking flow to the brain without excessive bleeding. The trial received $2.7 million of federal funding and six hospitals, including the Royal Melbourne, will begin offering the drug alongside patients' regular treatment. Police are investigating a fatal crash west of Seymour yesterday. A truck and a car collided on the Northern Highway at Toolbarak just before midday. The driver of the ute died at the scene and the driver of the semi was taken to hospital with minor injuries. Police are investigating an alleged sexual assault at Melbourne Central Shopping Centre. Investigations are on the hunt for a man who approached a teenage girl while she was with her family at the centre earlier this month. Detectives released an image of a man in his 30s to 40s. If any of these headlines has caused you distress, support is available at Lifeline at 13 11 14.
Welcome back to Panorama. You're sitting here with Taylor, Sura, and we've got a newbie in our ranks. Ruby's come and join us. Today investigated something that happened this week in the medical sphere. I'm real mad at this mic. The suspension is not working. It's really funny. Okay, this is a serious topic, guys. So access to medical abortions will become easier for women to access in Australia from the next month. Following the Senate inquiry into universal healthcare into reproductive healthcare, the Federal Assistant Minister for Health and Aged Care, Jed Kearney, has announced that the Therapeutic Goods Admission will remove the number of restrictions around prescribing and dispensing the medical abortion pill. There are two different types. There is mifepristone and misoprostol. I probably butchered those names, but I tried. They're medical words. I'm really diving into science with Sura here. I'm stepping on the line. Oh, thanks, dude. Yeah. So with these restrictions set to be lifted, all doctors and nurse practitioners will now have the power to prescribe the MS2 step pill system, and all pharmacies will have the ability to stock the drug. Currently, only 10% of doctors are certified to prescribe this pill. So currently, there's only 10% of doctors that women can go to in a time of urgency. In Australia, we have a 9-week window of when women can get these medical abortions. So within those 9 weeks, they have to find out that they are pregnant, they have to decide whether they want to keep the baby or not, and then they have to go through the process of finding a doctor, one of these 10% doctors, and then also finding a pharmacy that stocks the drug. So it is too complex, and it is
a lot of money, I assume, as well.
Right? I don't think the price is being addressed in this, and this is something that I spoke about with Professor Daniel Mazza. She was saying how the price isn't the next real hurdle. But having this just brought out to Australians and making it more accessible is really, really important. In 2019, one third of Australian women accessed abortion services and up to 50% in remote areas. So it is clearly needed. The abortion pill was first approved for use in Australia in 2006. So it's been around for a really long time and we're only now lifting these restrictions. And then, as I said earlier, there was a Senate inquiry, and that was on September 28, 2022. The Senate referred the inquiry to the Universal Access and then to the Senate Community Affairs Reference Committee for inquiry and report. So we're getting this report that has come out in the last month, just at the end of March, so 2 months ago, where we're really seeing the kind of progress and change that this could make. And that is why this legislation has now been changed. Mm-hmm. So I spoke with Professor Daniel Mazza from Monash University about how the changes in legislation will affect Australians and the medical community.
So this is the first major change to the arrangements that are in place for medical abortion service provision since medical abortion came into the country over 10 years ago. So GPs no longer have to undertake a mandatory training program and certification, nor do they have to re-register that certification every 3 years. The prescribing of medical abortion just becomes like the prescribing of any other medication. So what this means is that it's really destigmatizing abortion, and it's removing unnecessary red tape for GPs so that hopefully more will be willing to integrate this form of healthcare into their normal day-to-day practice. Absolutely. The other thing that it's doing is that it's removed the requirement for pharmacists to have to register to be able to dispense medical abortion medication in pharmacies. And that registration up until now has been linked to an individual pharmacist. So if that pharmacist wasn't working in the pharmacy that day, you wouldn't be able to get it. And that's caused enormous problems for women because they've had to hunt around to try and find a pharmacy that will be able to give them the medication when they've had a prescription. Mm. But because of this deregulation, now all pharmacies around the country will be able to stock and dispense the medication. So these might appear to be small changes, but really we think that they will have enormous impact in accessibility for women for medical abortion.
Absolutely. And this wasn't one of the written questions, but it just popped into my mind now. Do you know why they put all those rules and regulations surrounding this medication when it was first introduced?
Yeah, so when it was first introduced, we were in a very different political environment. We had a very conservative government, and medical abortion was a new approach to abortion that hadn't ever been in the country before, and people were not familiar with it, and they didn't really know much about it. And that combination meant that they put this kind of risk management plan around it without really thinking through the consequences. And I guess in the last 10 years, what's happened is that we now have a lot more experience with delivering the service, and we have a lot more resources for practitioners and for patients that are available. So 10 years ago when it was introduced, for example, we didn't have national guidelines for GPs on how to deliver medical abortion. Now they're accessible through the GP's desktop. Guidelines, patient information, videos for patients to watch on what happens with a medical abortion, animations, that kind of thing. So there's a lot more, resources and guidance out there to support this kind of practice. And we've also had the demonstration in Canada of what happens when you deregulate. So they deregulated 6 years ago in 2017, and what they found was that the abortion rates didn't go up, safety was maintained, and what happened as a result of deregulation was that there were a lot more providers who came forward to deliver the service.
Absolutely, and that is a great example of hopefully what we're going to be seeing here. How will this change better healthcare, particularly for women who have limited incomes or live in rural or regional areas?
Yeah, so I think that issue of being able to have the medication dispensed by any pharmacy is a major consequence of this deregulation, and I think over time we will see more practitioners delivering the service. So again, they won't have to hunt around for a practitioner. It's important to comment that medical abortion needs to be delivered up until the ninth week of the pregnancy, so it's a very time sensitive procedure. In Australia, we've got that limitation. So it takes some time for a woman to find out she's pregnant, have a think about that, make some decisions, and if she chooses to go forward with an abortion, then find a provider, have the consultations. She may need an ultrasound or other tests, and then go through the procedure. And she has to do all of that by 9 weeks, right?
Wow.
So hopefully having more GPs on the ground delivering this service will make all of that easier. But I just want to also highlight to your listeners that there is telehealth abortion available in Australia. So if you are a woman living in Horsham or, Bairnsdale or somewhere, Geraldton, and you need an abortion and you can't find a local provider to deliver that to you, you can get a medical abortion via telehealth, and you can get that consultations with a doctor working in Queensland or in Sydney or in metropolitan Melbourne who's delivering telehealth abortion, and you don't need to have had a pre-existing relationship with that, with that doctor. Unlike if you go to your local GP now and you want a telehealth consultation for other matters, you need to have seen that GP in the last 12 months or been to that practice face-to-face in the last 12 months. But for sexual and reproductive health consultations, such as medical abortion, that patient requirement does not exist. That actually came in during the pandemic. So that came in 2021. But I don't think many women are actually aware of that.
Absolutely. So what is the next move for bolstering women's sexual health?
Yeah. So I think in terms of access, we're waiting to see what the government does in relation to the 36 recommendations that came out in the Senate inquiry into universal access to reproductive health care. That report was just released last month, so we're waiting on the government response to those recommendations. But I think there are two key elements that will help women accessing abortion. The first one is to look at the issues of affordability and how services can be provided either at no cost or very low cost to women who need an abortion, because that is a huge barrier. And the other thing is the establishment of a national information hotline that women can ring or look up online that will help them to navigate to services where they are not available locally.
That was Professor Danielle Mazza talking about how the changes in legislations will affect Australians and the medical industry, and that specifically is the changes in abortion pill access. So, Ruby, tell me what's going on in the metaverse.
Yes, the metaverse. So, big news in the metaverse world this week. They have just launched Threads, which is a new meta app. It launched last Wednesday, and it has very, very similar vibes to Twitter. So, it's a place for sharing text updates and joining public conversations, as they have said there. So yeah, it's a meta app, as I said. So you need an Instagram account to log into it. So you have to like join from Instagram, which is a bit random. But that also comes with the ability to transfer over the accounts that you follow on Instagram to the new platforms. Like you don't have to go through and refollow everyone. So that's like an option.
That's good.
Yeah. So it hit 2 million users in the first 2 hours. And then in the first 5 days, it hit 100 million users. And Zuckerberg was like, wow, this is much more successful than we thought it would be.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah. Have either of you downloaded Threads yet?
I have not ventured yet. I'm so scared because it's connected to my Instagram. Firstly, like for me, Twitter is like a professional platform.
Yeah.
I use it for journalism work. So that's where my like professional headshot is. But my Instagram is a completely different Taylor.
Yeah.
And I don't want that linked with
that's fair.
I don't want Threads to become Twitter because I don't want those two worlds colliding.
And would you consider like creating a new Instagram account?
Oh,
like,
what
for
a
work,
mission that
for
would
Threads?
Be.
I know, it's just like a bit like annoying.
And
right?
The whole thing that we're hearing, like this is, you know, rumors, is that, you know, it's all connected. So if you delete your Threads, you delete your Insta. And I've curated that child so much. No, I absolutely just post whatever. But I don't want, you know, my idols following me on Twitter one day and seeing me dancing around my living room.
Like, yeah. Like work and life personality
exactly.
Are separate. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I leave my work at work. What about you, Sora?
I don't know. It's an interesting idea to create a new Threads account completely separate from Instagram because same as you, I do use Twitter quite a lot to find scientists on, you know, related to their papers and stuff like that. It's a very good place to find people. So,
we'll think about this.
We need to think about
it.
Exactly.
It came too quickly as well. Like, it was just here.
Yeah.
Did they announce it, like, early on, or did they just kind of go, like, it's here?
Well, like, they'd been, like, vaguely talking about, like, that they were going to bring out something similar. And then this is when Musk challenged Zuckerberg to a cage fight.
Oh, wait, so that's why?
I think so. Yeah, that it's over this, but that it wasn't actually specifically been announced that it was Threads.
Really?
I'm obsessed.
It was, like, there was, like, something. It was to do with the fact that, like, there was, well, obviously they've always got tension because they're rival
tension.
Companies or whatever, but I think it was over this, so obviously, like, Musk is, like, clearly in stress because Twitter has really gone through a period of prolonged upheaval since Musk took it over last year.
Mm-hmm.
He made a lot of changes and cut a lot of jobs and has now, like, imposed all these viewing limits on Twitter, even for paid users, which I find so odd. Like, if you're paying, should be unlimited. Like,
yeah, then who is able to view it all?
Yeah, like, so I think it's really clever of Meta to be like, Twitter is, like, clearly, like, you know, it's...
Yeah,
it's,
jumping in on the bandwagon.
It's doing all, like, these things that people aren't liking, so let's, like, create a somewhere that some, like, people that can go elsewhere that's, like, a similar vibe.
Well, yeah, well, we'd have that with a lot of apps, but we don't have that with Twitter. Like, I feel like Facebook and Facebook and Instagram are together, like they're owned by the same company, right? But they felt very similar at the time. It felt like Facebook was like for the older generation and Instagram was for like the younger one, and so it's nice to have the alternative. I wonder, like, who's going to be the better, like, manager of the platform? See, we've got Zuckerberg, who made Facebook.
Yeah.
He's, like, the OG. He's, you know, he defined the genre, essentially. And then, Elon Musk is come in here with his Teslas and SpaceX. And, like, I'm sure he seems very, very smart.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure this is his, you know, arena.
Yeah, well, Musk just seems to be putting in a lot of fingers in different pies and just kind of seeing what sticks. But I think the Twitter thing is, like, clearly, like, hasn't been received very well. So, yeah, it's hard to say. But, yeah, anyway, they're just, like, beefing over it, basically,
I love
online,
it.
Which I'm like, oh, grow up, you're grown up men. Anyway, but it is interesting because, yeah, it is really the hot new app that everyone is talking about right now. But, and obviously, yeah, Threads is also owned for Meta. And so I wonder kind of, obviously, when new, like, apps get brought in, everyone's like, oh, I don't want to learn another app and use another app and stuff. But we saw Be Real do it really successfully last year.
True.
So that really worked out. But also, I am a little concerned because, obviously, Meta already has such of a monopoly in the media. Mm. Well, not a monopoly, but, like, they own so many of the most popular social media platforms. I do worry about that, like, monopoly.
For sure.
I'm like, I think it is good to keep, like, social media platforms, like, you know, separate. So,
yeah, but then we saw, I mean, there's a hesitancy with having, you know, new up-and-comers doing these apps. We saw with TikTok that everyone started to get really anxious about their security and then started to point fingers at a whole country of people just because of, you know, where the app was created. And it was really disgusting and insensitive. And perhaps people just trust Zuckerberg more.
Yeah, which I don't understand. I'm like, they're stealing your data too.
Yeah, I'm like, it's exactly the same. We signed the same agreements.
Exactly.
I think it's probably even worse because he's got, you know, different websites worth of data.
Well, exactly. So, yeah, Threads is just, it's right now it's like looking like the hot new app, but we'll have to see if it like works or not. Like, do you guys think it'll be successful?
See, it's not as sexy as Be Real. Be Real is like a new concept. It's sexy. It's fun, right? I can say sexy on the radio.
I do think everyone likes the novelty of Musk and Zuckerberg fighting over this, though. Everyone's this is funny. I feel like people are taking sides I'm a Twitter person now. I'm a Threads person. Like,
absolutely. One of my favorite journalists, Patricia Cavaeus, fully just was like, I'm done. I'm out. I'm on the other side. She was just like, I'm going to be on the other side.
Yeah.
Hashtag Threads and left. And I was like, what an absolute legend.
But is that kind of risk though? Because like obviously your Instagram account can get like hacked or deleted.
Exactly.
So then I'm kind of like, if you're putting all your eggs in the Instagram / Threads basket, then if it gets hacked or deleted, then you're like not going to be left with much. Like, I don't know, you might have TikTok or Facebook or whatever, but if you've just gone off Twitter then.
There are so many apps. Are you overwhelmed by like all these apps?
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if people are feeling overwhelmed by it. Like I certainly have. Like I have barely had a chance to go on Threads yet because I'm like, oh, another social media app. Like I do social media in my day-to-day job, so I already spend so much time on a lot of the apps. But like having another one to think about, I'm like, oh my god, this is
just stressing
me
out. They're just gonna keep coming because people keep making money off them. But it's how we function as a society now.
Exactly. And like social media does evolve. Like hello, MySpace. Like that does not exist anymore as far as I'm aware. Exactly. So I'm like, in 20 years, like, what is the social media landscape going to look like? I think it is good that they are bringing in like new apps to see what's worked and like they're moving like society along with the trends and what people want and stuff. So
sure. That's the thing, though. This might create competition, which means that Musk and Zuckerberg mode might be like, we need to create better features.
Yeah. True. Trying to win us over.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you can kind of look at the streaming competition as like an example of technology and how that's being used. And they've, you know, gotten in discounts and I've only got this movie. I can play only on this platform. And, you know, there's going to be like secret features of each one. And we should just predict this. But I get what you mean. Having that competition might actually make these platforms like a lot better.
Maybe. But yeah, I think it's a bit different though, because obviously these social media platforms are free for the most part. Like, you know, unless you're wanting to buy ads or whatever. But I think, the difference with the streaming platforms is that it's so like the absolute saturation of it is that you have to pay for all of them. And like, if there's a specific thing you want to watch on a specific one, it's different. Yeah. So I think the stakes are a little lower with social media just because like there's not that payment. Like, so you can just go and give it a go. And if you don't like it, there's like nothing lost.
For sure.
Yeah. What, it's super interesting.
What I've been hearing is that, and it makes me a little bit anxious about Threads, is that it's actually not available in Europe It's not what? Available in Europe at the moment.
I saw about this because they
have so the EU has a digital markets act, and they have to go like past more hurdles to release this app in Europe, and it is not yet released. They haven't reached that standard, and I'm like, do I want like. I don't know what is in the Markets Act, but I'm like, do I want to trust it if it hasn't passed? You know, the EU is quite a big populated place. Surely that's a lot of their demographic.
Yeah.
So surely that's a priority, and it hasn't passed that. So I'm a bit concerned about what's passed.
I assume it's just because Threads got rolled out so quickly. Like maybe they just haven't had like the time to go through the due processes and stuff. But yeah, I know the EU do have really much more strict data laws. So we'll have to wait and see if they get it. But it is interesting that you don't have it. That's a lot of people
No
option to have that. They're probably still on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised that it did so well in the first week if the whole demographic is completely missing out.
Exactly. So it'll be interesting if they can catch up to Twitter's numbers.
We'll have to watch this space, as we like to say. Now we've got Science with Surah.
Yay!
It always ends with a yay!
I love it.
A little bit off, but here we are. So today's story is a little bit more on the hard-hitting side of things. A new study from Northwestern University found that there's a significant connection between ground deformation and structural integrity of urban buildings, which was caused by the ground heating up. Okay, so they conducted a study in Chicago where they placed 150 temperature sensors above ground and below ground. And, they went along with it. And they found that the ground was possibly heating up. So they also fed the data into simulations, and they found that according to the simulations, warmer temperatures that can cause the ground to swell and expand upward by 12 millimeters and downwards by 8 millimeters.
That's wild.
That is so much movement for, you know, especially if you imagine a building is on that. You know, that's why the Leaning Tower of Pisa kind of vibes. Like, that's it's a bit scary. Tell us, how does that, how? How do we fix that?
Honestly, it's the answer to that is same with every other climate change problem.
Big climate change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great. So are you basically saying that the us building buildings is adding to climate change, essentially?
Yeah, not just.
And there is so much construction over Melbourne.
Yeah, well, everywhere. Like, it's a booming industry. So that's, is that like, is this something that like construction people are aware of and doing something about?
I doubt it, honestly.
They should listen to Science with Sura.
Exactly.
Well, because like obviously they have to make buildings like movable enough so like when there's an earthquake, like they can withstand a bit of movement. So I wonder if like this is something they can factor in.
That's so interesting.
This is a fairly new field of study, though. I don't think there are that many research into it. There was a suggestion made in the study that this heat can be used as thermal power and then restructured into different resources.
Yeah.
But I do not think we have that technology as of yet.
Yeah.
It's almost like a circular economy, if you put it like that. Like, imagine we're making the earth hot and then we use the heat from the earth to heat our homes. And that would make
it work.
Yeah?
That could work.
I mean, where's the Northwestern University? Call me. I got plans for your heat.
This study does mention, though, that the ground is heating up due to parking spaces and all the heats that we are.
Wow. So even parking spaces. So like having a car, like is it because the car's there or
car
just...
Car parks. Because concrete specifically is a metal that, sorry, not a metal, but concrete is a substance that just collects heat.
Yeah.
It's very hot. I don't know if you guys have ever stepped on concrete bare feet in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's Aussies. Hot.
100%.
Exactly.
100%.
And most of our... train and subway tunnels, underground highways and underground roadways, parking spaces, mostly concrete. So
true. Like if you've ever been, I mean, my frame of reference, I'm thinking of the London Underground, because we don't have much underground here. But if you think of how close that is to, you know, it's obviously not the center of the earth, but earth and the ground that we walk above and, you know, Mother Earth, we've drilled into her essentially and built these concrete tunnels. And that's to know that concrete is heating the earth in such a way. And we've got it just like embedded. We've put these veins of concrete in like Mother Earth.
It's, yeah.
I sound like such a hippie dippy kid when I say Mother Earth. But
this has already caused contamination of groundwater and health resources, or issues similar to that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where do we take this information? Where do we go from here? Or is it just a sad climate change
it's
fact?
It's just a sad climate change study, honestly, at the moment. Hopefully, this can be translated into policy proposals, and then something can be done about it. Mm. But
see, what I find really, really interesting is that we will spend this time to research this kind of stuff, and then, you know, these scientists have put in this time and effort to do this, and then we'll, you know, tell our politicians about this problem, and you know, there's not much action. If you recall, at the end of last season, I did an interview with Tim Reid, and he spoke about it's not necessarily, like, not wanting to believe the science. It's that our politicians aren't scientists. They are just like you and me, and they are as dumbfounded as I am when you tell stuff like, you know, whenever you do science with Sura, that's basically politicians' reaction often, because they're often lawyers, business people, and it's just, it's a lack of understanding is what it is. And so there needs to be a median. Maybe this can be what science with Sura is for. but from going from the hard work that these scientists do to getting that meaning change.
On that point, though, there actually is the International Panel of Climate Change. They release a report every 6 years or so, and then they release, like, every year they release a revised report. And what that report is essentially like a year, you know, a few year long study of things like this. And I am hopefully we will see this as part of the next report as well. Mm-hmm. And they release a policy guidelines, suggested policy changes for anyone and everyone to take. They send it to governments, they send it to people who they can, and like see if anyone wants to implement that. But
do you see much action on that is the question.
Exactly.
That's also part of it. It's like,
yeah,
politicians, listen, that'd be great. That's my call. I think what's important here is that ultimately, the more we research climate change and the more we research what our impact on the earth is, the more we can actually do about it. So, you know, politicians aside, this is ultimately a step in the right direction, because it's like being diagnosed with a chronic health problem. Like, we know what's wrong with our body now. We can fix it. We can figure out the right meds to take it, hopefully. This metaphor is terrible. I'm so sorry. I've butchered science with Sura.
It's not good.
Shall we move on to panettainment?
We definitely should move on to panettainment.
I feel like I've derailed science with Sura so much as entertainment news now.
But hey, you learn something with science with Sura every week.
Every week. Politicians, listen in. So, in panettainment news, I would be living under a rock if I pretended that the Barbie movie wasn't happening.
Pink is everywhere right
Barbie
now.
Barbie fever. It is Barbie chic. What is the word?
Barbie core.
Barbie core. That's what the kids say. Oh my god, I'm so old. I'm like Barbie chic. So let's chat a little bit about the London premiere that happened yesterday in London in English time. So Margot Robbie, Ryan Gosling, and a bunch of other stars have stunned on another yet pink carpet for the London premiere of Barbie. Margot and Ryan embodied Barbie and Ken, with Robbo wearing a pink Vivienne Westwood gown with like a little rose on the side. And I'll have to research this, but she has done the most iconic thing this premiere season. She has recreated every look Barbie has ever done. She dressed like the 1960s evening Barbie, which was just pearls, fur, absolutely stunning.
She looked amazing.
Absolutely stunning. She is Barbie. Like, oh, when you look at her on these red carpets, you're like, you are Barbie.
I know.
I loved
also the other night the black dress that she wore, because everyone else was wearing pink and the carpet was pink, so she really stood out with a black
absolutely.
Number.
Absolutely.
She didn't really surprise everyone, because obviously she's like mostly been wearing
she's
pink.
She's been doing only pink. Or that one, Little Nerdy Fan, was called... Solo in the Spotlight was their name of that Barbie. And I thought that was the most iconic thing.
I love that.
Because,
it was gorgeous.
Oh, she looks stunning. And only her could pull off, like, a tutu at the ankles.
I know.
Like, I would look like I'm falling.
The stylist working with her right now is working overtime. Oh, my God.
I can't. She used to work with Valentino from memory.
Chanel?
That one?
That did her dirty.
Yeah, I was going to say, who did her dirty? Was it?
Well, that's the opinion of the public.
That's the opinion of the public, not of Panorama. Anyway, and then Gosling rocked like a mint coloured suit. And I was like, I want that.
I love that.
I wanted every suit he's had on this tour. It's all been pastels. I watched an interview with them and I just thought how amazing it was that this movie is made by a woman. It's produced by Margot. It stars a woman. It's about a woman. It's very, very feminine. And you've got these men coming into this movie and just so, like, bolstering the women that are
I know.
There.
Well, did you see on one of the red carpets, Ryan Gosling was wearing a necklace with a little E on it for his wife's name,
stop.
Eva? I was like, oh, my God, can you not be so cute?
Oh. Can I find a man like that? And we also saw Dua Lipa, Sam Smith, and Will Ferrell. Dressing up for the occasion.
Yeah. Will Ferrell's in the movie.
Yes, he is. Oh, yes. I'm not going to share my opinions on Will Ferrell in the air. And then we also got nominations are out for the TV's Night of Nights, the Emmys.
Ooh.
So Aussie Sarah Snook is up for an award for her work on the HBO drama Succession with leads the event, and she leads the event with 27 nominations.
Whoa.
So Succession just took, like, a bunch of the nominations.
27 just her?
Oh, no, for Succession.
Oh, Succession, right. Okay.
I don't think you can qualify for 27
categories. I was like, that's
categories.
Wild.
But, yeah, the whole show is just everyone's been nominated, from the shoe cleaner to Sarah Snook. And then the Emmys are hoping to broadcast in November, but could be delayed due to the looming actors' strike, which follows the writers' strike that's been happening in the US. If people haven't been following along, it's basically like kind of coming off the back of that. So actors supporting writers and just... We're hopefully getting to see some unionization in the US of these really, really talented creatives. Do you have anything to add to Panotainment?
Yes.
Guys?
So another news story that dropped this week is that Britney Spears just announced that she's releasing a memoir.
It's
called
Britney Bleep.
Her memoir is called The Woman in Me, and it is due to hit bookshelves October 24th.
100% reading that.
So apparently, like, she has worked on it a bit herself, but obviously, as most celebrity memoirs go, she's worked with a ghostwriter. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what's in there. Obviously, coming off the back of her coming out of her 14-year conservatorship, so
yes.
I think it's a highly anticipated memoir.
Absolutely. I don't know why she didn't call it It's Britney Bleep.
I know, right?
That's perfect title.
Well, maybe because it's got the swear word in there, like, that it would...
Oh, that's boring.
There'd be
Britney,
issues with that. But I know.
Have you watched... There's the Netflix doco that came out, like, right around the time of the conservatorship. And it's the most, like, heartbreaking doco. And it really goes from this perspective of a journalist that kind of would work with her. I think she was from the Rolling Stone. And this journalist basically, like, goes through when she first met Britney at 18 and then seeing her. And then there was one point where Britney, like, sneaks to a bathroom and tries to be like, get me out of this, like, conservatorship,
yeah.
Like, begs her. And there's this whole complex relationship between the two of them. It's really beautiful. And I look forward to seeing that on a page.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be really moving. And I hope that a lot of it is coming from Britney, because
yeah.
I think this is a really great opportunity for her to tell her own story.
Great.
Because people have been telling it for her for so long.
Yeah. No, I'm very excited for her.
It's Britney. Beep. I want to say it so bad, but we're on radio. We're, you know, the kids are listening. So that's been your season 3, episode 1 of Panorama. Thank you so much for joining us in the studio, and make sure to follow us on Panorama Sin at Instagram, Twitter, all the things, not Threads
yet. Not Threads yet.
We haven't decided. Give us an idea. We'll put a poll up on our Insta. Do you want us to get Threads? Would you be down, or am I just making more work for our social media manager? Thank you so much for joining us. It has been Taylor, Sura, and Ruby here in the studio, and you've been listening to Panorama.